The Guardian.
Football daily from The Guardian at Euro 2008. It's the most viewed spectacle on earth, apart from the World Cup and the Olympics. And that video of the squaddy with the firework up to Jackson. Euro 2008, 16 nations, 8 stadiums, 31 games and 1 football daily. In our tournament opener, we review the day one action. The Swiss, faulty in Basel. The Portuguese, carving up Turkey. We preview Sunday's games, Austria-Croatia, here in Vienna, plus the favourites, Germany, taking on the Poles. We round up the day's top news stories from the Euros with bad news for Adrian Mutu, and not from the Euros, Wayne Rooney in Dance Floor Misadventures, a top DJ speaks. We check your posts, and Barry joins the Culture Club, all in today's Football Daily.
Football Daily from The Guardian at Euro 2008.
Hello, everybody. Here we are then at the Gusser Beer Clinic in downtown Vienna. With me here, Barry, Glendinning.
Hi, James.
Hi there. And Barney Roney, who's just jetted in.
Grüß Gott.
Yeah, indeed, as we say. As they do. And Raphael, good as stock to you.
I thought I was going to be the third man in Vienna.
Honigstein on fire. You're on a train. Raphael Honigstein, clearly. And you're on a train bound for Zurich.
That's right.
Right.
We went to see the Switzerland game, and now we're going home.
Right. Well, I'm looking forward to hear about that. Did everyone enjoy day one? Did it live up to our enormous expectations?
Probably not, but it was okay. Yes.
Well, I had a good time. I went to the fan zone with Barney, and
Very nice. Very extremely well behaved fan zone. Very organised.
Right. Oh, we had some fun. We played some games, and you can actually see what we got up to in living colour on the Guardian's website. We're doing a couple of video clips up on there. You might have seen the one we had up on Saturday. And so if you want to check out the Guardian's homepage, /football, it'll be in there. And of course, there was the opening ceremony as well, Barney, which you've got some fantastic details about. You were there for the opening ceremony, weren't you, Raphael?
I was, and I have to say, by the standard of these sort of things, who are usually terrible and dreadful, I thought this was a really good one. I enjoyed it.
What did you like most about it?
I liked the bits with the cows. I thought it was very good. I think there was one cow even being milked at one stage. I thought that was a nice touch, something a bit different that you don't see every day in
Switzerland,
in football stadiums.
Oh, right.
And also, I don't know if you saw that bit about the dancing, the sort of dancing couples they had in the sort of ballroom with big chandeliers. I thought that was good.
Right, that was the kind of Austrian side of things, was it? Because the Swiss thing was all about... Barney was telling me he's got a press release from UEFA, which explains what it all means. Barney?
Well, I have some official facts.
The best kind of facts.
These are UEFA facts. The cubes used in the opening ceremony weigh 5 tonnes in total. Is that a good fact?
All right. What about the bit where it explained what it was all about? It was all about grass, was it not? Giving
well,
life?
There were certain themes, yes, which obviously came across. Fresh grass.
Well, there you go.
The generous lands of Switzerland and Austria.
Right, okay. That's probably enough meaning.
Don't you want some more things?
No, that's fine.
Alpine winter.
Alpine winter, lovely. There was a skier, of course. Now, before we go on any further, in a second or two, we're going to find out about the football and Raphael, you're sitting patiently there on a train and the Swiss opener and all that. But before we go any further, let's wheel out the bongs and bring you up to date on the latest news. Bong.
Indecision reigns at Portugal. While Cristiano Ronaldo continues to issue more come and get me please than Duncan Norvell, meanwhile manager Big Phil Scolari has refused to rule out a move to Stamford Bridge. That's good news for Chelsea, who had been turned down more than a radio playing Westlife in their search for a new manager.
Meanwhile, Romania's Adrian Mutu has been ordered to pay £9.6 million. No, not to his old dealer, but to former club Chelsea for breach of contract after his cocaine bust there in 2004. Mutu will appeal the verdict. It is a big blow for the player, which is, after all, how all the trouble started.
And Poland coach Leo Beinhaker has apologised for a stunt in Polish paper Super Express, which printed a superimposed picture of Beinhaker holding the decapitated heads of Michael Ballack and Germany's manager Yogi Löw, with the headline, "Leo, bring us their heads," said the manager. "I'm very sorry about it. I've no idea why it was only a mock-up."
I have to say, you pronounce their names beautifully there.
That's making it up, to be honest, but it sounds good, doesn't it?
Very, very nice.
We went to Vienna for Euro 2008, and all you got was this lousy podcast.
Well, right, next up in the Gusser Beer Clinic in downtown Vienna. Do drop by if you're in the area, and thirsty, particularly. It's time to tackle the opening game. It was, of course, Switzerland against the Czech Republic. No home banker for the Swiss. Rafael, eh?
Yeah, the other game, I thought that the Swiss did as well as they could. They had a terrible blow when they lost Alex Frey, who's not only their only striker, but also the captain, and they were really shocked. Took a little bit to get back into it. And didn't have anyone up front to capitalize on the chances they created. I mean, they were probably the better side as far as openings were concerned, but the Czechs scored with their first shot on goal, and I think probably their last as well, and they got the points.
Mm. Yeah, the astonishing number of chances for the Swiss. We had Von Lanthen hitting the bar and all sorts of things, and also a handball shout that for Lucy that on another day might have been...
Well, I thought the Swiss were robbed, basically. I thought they were vastly superior to the Czechs and should have had a penalty. That would have earned them a point at least. And, I'd say they'd be very, very disappointed.
I agree. And, Rafa, did you think that the substitution changed the game 10 minutes into the second half? I mean, the Swiss seemed to be dominating at that stage, didn't they?
And the funny thing was that we asked Koller afterwards in the mix on what he thought about that. And Koller, really straight face, said... It was a great idea from the manager.
Oh, good for him, good for him. Briefly on the Swiss, do you think that's the end of their particular kind of home nation or host nation dream? They've lost Frey, they've got two tough games coming up, and they really needed to get some points against the Czechs, no?
They did need to get something, and they nearly did, and I think that's why they feel so dejected. If the Czechs would have been the vastly superior side, dominating them, making their individual talent, which they do have, count, I think they would have said, okay, well, we tried and we weren't good enough. But they were good enough and still didn't win. I think that's the thing that's really hard to take. And Ludovic Manier, the Stuttgart left-back, was still there talking almost an hour after the match, complaining about the referee and saying, you know, we have to play at a very high level, and then you get a referee who's not at a good level at all, and it's making me angry and so on. Not so sure about the two penalty shouts for handball. I think... one of them you could have given. I think the other one was
a bit more tenuous.
UEFA, in their wisdom, made Ufalushi man of the match afterwards, which just rubbed it in. And I think what it was.
My word. And so the Czechs failed to impress despite picking up the victory there. And there were a lot of questions about how they were going to perform with Nedved now retired and Rizitsky out for the thing. But it doesn't look particularly as though it's going to be an auspicious tournament for them.
No, they looked very poor, I have to say. And even the players afterwards said, well, we have to play a lot better. I mean, this is not good enough. Against Portugal, this sort of performance will bring us nothing.
Mm.
And they were all very open and honest about that they felt disappointed with themselves. The problem is, of course, you know, they just don't have that much talent anymore.
Right.
The golden generation was gone. Rosicki's not there. And then, you know, the rest of the squad is a little bit pedestrian in midfield. And all they've got is a very solid back four. I'm not sure that's going to be enough.
Rafa, I thought Petr Cech had a very ropey game. Did he have anything to say for himself afterwards?
Well, Cech talked a little bit about the fact that he felt his team were giving the ball away far too easily, and they should have used the ball a lot better, should have gone forward with more conviction. I thought he had a decent game because he still made the important saves, you know, from Barnetta, and there was a long-distance shot as well in the first half, which he parried. So, yeah, I mean, maybe he didn't look as solid as he did, certainly in the first couple of seasons for Chelsea, but I still think he did enough to keep them in them, and he kept a clean sheet.
Magnificent. You mentioned Portugal there, who do look like dangerous opponents, at least based on their performance against Turkey, which, Barney, you joined us here in the Gusa Beer Clinic. In fact, we had some pudding as well, and it was fantastic.
Very nice apple strudel, yeah.
We did, didn't we? The game was quite pleasant as well, I thought.
Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, Portugal, they seem to have very good on the flanks.
Mm-hmm.
Two great wingers. It's sort of a shame they still don't seem to have that centre forward. I mean, they still have Nuno Gomes, who came off.
But he played a bit of a part in the first goal.
Yeah, but I imagine if they had a really, really classy centre forward, he wouldn't be playing.
Right.
And that possibly is their weak point. I mean, to me, they always look a little bit like a cut-price Brazil, sort of facsimile of a really good team, playing in the style of really good, keeping the ball perhaps too well and lacking a bit of direct thrust.
Because a lot of people were talking about them as potentially winners of this tournament. You didn't see anything that would back up that notion today.
Oh, no, I thought they were great. But, I mean, the first game of the tournament, and obviously the second goal was fantastic. I mean, it was a great spin in the box by João Moutinho. And that was fantastic. Well, they did celebrate as though they actually won the tournament at the end, which was slightly worrying.
You worry about that whole kind of over-sentimental...
Gilding the lily, is that a phrase?
Oh, very much so. I'm not sure if it's the appropriate one. But,
it's certainly a phrase.
It's a phrase, but we'll take that one.
I thought it was interesting, Ronaldo's first contribution to Euros 2008 was a dive. Some diving, I think it was two blatant dives by Tunçay Sanli as well, so... The UEFA crowd, nobody got booked for any of this, so the apparent UEFA crackdown hasn't
yes,
really
we
got
also
off to
saw,
an auspicious start.
We saw the other side of that as well, didn't we? The terrible tackle on Nani by the Brazilian, naturalised Brazilian in the Turkish team, Aurelio, which was a real leg breaker and should have been sent off for.
Not since Lord Lucan have we seen a Nani treated so badly, I think. Not sure what the laws will make of that, but anyway, Raphael, your view? You saw it in the media centre with various dejected Swiss. Is that right in Basel?
Yeah, that's right. And I thought certainly the game looked a lot more open than the game I watched in the stadium, which was nice. I thought the Turks tried to go for it, and the Portuguese hit some glorious long balls, diagonal balls to the flanks, and it really worked well for them. I think the interesting thing for me is, you know, they pushed Ronaldo up as a centre forward effectively when Nuno Gomes came off in the last 20 minutes or so. And I'm just wondering if whether Scolari is going to stick with that, because we all have seen that they haven't really got that much up front. So one way to deal with that, the way United have dealt with it, the way that Roma have dealt with it, is actually to play without a centre forward to begin with. So I'm just wondering whether that's going to be the way forward for Portugal.
Magnificent. Raphael, stick around because we want to hear your thoughts on Germany presently. It's a very smooth train you're on there, by the sound of it.
Oh, it's a Swiss train, what do you expect?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yesterday I was on a train where there was actually an announcement that said, we have to apologise, but we might be 1 or 2 minutes late.
My word. Gotta love those Swiss trains.
Football Daily in Vienna for The Guardian. Does what it says on the tin.
More from Raphael Honigstein later on. Now, while Europe's finest have been making football magic here in Middle Europe, what of England? What have their players been up to? Wayne Rooney was hitting the headlines of late for his stag week in Ibiza. On Tuesday, he was spotted at the opening night of Radio 1 DJ Dave Pearce's summer residence at noted club Eden. And earlier today, I spoke to Dave, actually, about what went down.
Basically, I've been DJing in Ibiza for 10 years, so it was quite a big opening party, and Wayne Rooney was on his stag do. It was actually the first night of his stag do, and he turned up with his entourage to have a bit of a session, quite unexpectedly, and he went for it.
He went for it how, Dave?
Well, I have to say, I don't think he'd win Britain's Got Talent for his dancing skills. They're not quite as poetic as his football moves, but he was certainly giving it the best moves he could, shall we say, with a beer or two in his hand, and
right.
He was certainly, it struck me as someone that's obviously been to a few nightclubs in his time, put it that way.
There were some dramatic pictures of some of the aftermath of his various stag days over there. I was just wondering, what kind of wreckage was wreaked in the Eden?
Well, to be fair, he was quite well behaved, really. And what I liked about him is he didn't have any sort of attitude or airs and graces. He was just there to go and have a good time with his mates, and the sort of people he brought with him were obviously people that he'd grown up with as well, so he kind of stuck by his mates from early on, which I thought was nice. He was on his stag do, so you expect him to have a pretty wild time. We cleared out an area behind the DJ console to give him a bit of space. I will say there were hundreds of young ladies staring at the DJ booth, not for me, for him, obviously, and he could have had his pick of quite a few, but he was on his best behaviour, so I don't think Colleen's got anything to worry about. He was just having a good time.
Did he have any particular requests, Dave?
Well, yes. Actually, one of his mates said to me, I'm sort of known for playing anthems on Radio 1, and although this was actually more of an underground night, they said, could you stick some on for him? So I played Underworld Born Slippy to kick things off, which has got its lager references and what have you, and he soon had his hands in the air, and his rather unusual dancing to go with it. So he was a guy going out to have hopefully one of the best nights of his life, a night he'll remember for a long time, and he certainly gave it plenty of energy.
Brilliant. I was thinking more of Grandma We Love You by, was it the St Anton's?
Quite interesting that Westlife have been booked for the wedding, of course, and judging by his mates that I met and spoke to and his sort of general vibe that he had about the whole clubbing thing, I can imagine a lot of people possibly nipping out when they got to perform, or maybe he'll bring a ghetto blaster down to the hotel for a bit of a secret after party.
So they've hired Westlife for the wedding, have they?
That's what I've heard, yes.
I believe Colleen is a big fan of Westlife. I suspect Wayne and his chums possibly aren't.
Yeah. Well, you never know. You know, Wayne may suddenly, you know, he may have looked up some of the lyrics, and you never know. He could be a closet Westlife fan, but somehow I doubt it.
I doubt it too, Dave. Listen, just finally, any other top footballing names been heading down your way of late, given that they've got the summer off?
Well, I haven't seen them yet. The season has just actually started in Ibiza this week, so it's early doors. But I would imagine there'll be a few. I mean, a couple of years ago, funny enough, I invited Victoria Beckham out, and she was going to bring David, but he had training and was able to make it, because he's quite a big dance fan as well. Which everyone at the club was gutted about that, so they were delighted to see Wayne in finally this Tuesday.
Football Daily from The Guardian at Euro 2008.
Dave Pearce of Radio 1. Barney, we had an interesting stag do experience today, not in any way with us participants, but a large group of people from Nottingham.
Yes, they were fun, weren't they? They seemed thirsty as well.
Yeah. If you were curious, you might, I'm not sure if they make the final cut, but they might be in that video clip business up at Guardian's website. Now, while we were listening to that, Barry's been and disappeared. Barry, where are you now?
Thanks, James. I'm downstairs in the beer clinic with Armand Gunther, who's very kindly been serving us beer ever since we got here, the effects of which are probably all too apparent to our listeners. Gunther, basically, I'm trying to immerse myself in Austrian culture, and I was wondering if you could help me with some German, because I don't know any apart from some very basics. Tell me, what is the German for, I'm looking for my friend, the small bald man?
Ich suche meinen Freund mit der Glatze.
Ich suche meine Klein.
Suche is I'm looking for.
Suche? Ich suche?
Yeah, and the man with the... Well, the man with the board. Board is Glatze.
Glatze. All right. So, one more time.
Ich suche meinen Freund mit der Glatze.
Ich suche meinen Freund mit der Glatze.
Yeah, that was quite good.
We're getting there. Well, I think I'm going to hand back to Mr. Glatze now. So, thank you very much for that, Gunther. Tomorrow, I shall be visiting the attractive blonde woman who works in the tobacconist around the corner from our flat, and we'll see what she can teach me.
Football Daily from the Gerza Beer Clinic, Vienna, for Euro 2008.
Barry, you've now returned here.
I have, yes. I ran up the stairs at top speed.
Well done. You haven't had that much culture since you washed those underpants. But let's move on to some posts, eh? He said, tapping the attractive wooden tableware. Alb1154 wants the picture of people inspecting. Good shout, this Alb1154. The picture of people inspecting Sean Ingle's savaged arse, which Jonathan was telling us about from the experience in Germany. So I don't know if anyone can dig that up. Who was the photographer who was there?
I think it was Dan Chung.
Right, Dan Chung, if you
top
or anyone who knows
photographer.
Yeah, we want that online. Pickles the Wonder Dog is working in Basel as a Euro 2008 volunteer. He says volunteering is fun, but it does have the deadly dull side, as testified by his job today, counting the seats in St. Jakob's Stadium. A good one, Pickles. You know, God bless the volunteers and stuff, you know.
We saw a lot of volunteers down the fan zone. Some of them do have some very dull duties to conduct. We also saw the match balls.
Right.
150 euros, is it?
Yeah.
Is it a match ball? Quite pricey.
They are, aren't they? Yes. But top quality gear. Imagine Peter Cech is going to be snapping up one or two of those. But or possibly not. Ulliger, or some derivation thereof, is in Vienna. And says Vienna has really good ice cream, maybe the best you can get in Europe outside of Italy, and he has three places we should try: Tuchlauben, Schwedenplatz, or Tichy in the 10th district. Also, which beer clinic are you going to be at, says Oliger, and that's the, once again, Gusse Beer Clinic. Thanks for that shout. But RVPS Shins versus Charlton, or something like that, in Linz, which is not far, I believe, from... Yeah, not far at all. Okay, for Austria being packed full of Germans, yeah, he says in response to something Raphael said. Let's just hope you won't reserve the best places in the fan zones with your towels. Ha ha. Great stuff. And he says, no, the best ice cream you can get in Vienna is at Tuchlauben. P.S. Has anyone else, grumpy old men in mind, when they... Has anybody else got grumpy old men in mind when they think of James and Barry sharing a room together? Villa Support Group, all the way there in Toronto, saying, James and Barry in a hotel room together for 3 weeks. I imagine by the end all we'll get is broken in transmissions as the two become increasingly insane. There will be halting and obscure references to the football amid cries of terror and the sound of doors being broken down with a faint murmur of what the hell is that noise from nearby patrons. Or am I describing the existing pod? Sing.
How have you found living with me, James? I think you're quite okay.
I barely saw you today, Barry, because you didn't emerge from your room until what time?
1 o'clock? 12:30, I think
right,
it was.
Yeah, 12:30.
And then I spanked you on numerous occasions playing Wii tennis.
Hey.
I ripped you a new one for about 5 games in a row.
That's true. Okay, well, there you go. Now, Matteo83 says he wanted to give us 4 reasons why the Germans might lose on Sunday, amongst which are, praising this a little bit, Leo Benhaken and what was the other? Lehmann as well, of course, who's been confirmed in goal for the Germans. So that's an ideal opportunity then to move on and hear a bit more about Germany-Poland. I wonder, do we have Raphael Honigstein back on the line, and quite literally, on his way to Zurich? Raphael, are you there?
I am here.
Oh, crikey. What a faithful fellow you are. Germany-Poland then tomorrow. I imagine this is going to be your destination, is it?
No.
Oh.
I've got a day off tomorrow.
But just, you know, pretending that it might be. What do you reckon then on the Germans? Everyone reckons that they're the favourites. Are you a believer?
I'm a believer. I think they'll meet Portugal in the semi-finals. But not to go get ahead of ourselves. I think Poland are not good enough to really come up with a credible challenge today. Certainly not in this game. There's a lot of ballyhoo about Polish tabloids depicting a decapitated Balak, etc., which is sort of taken away a little bit from the game itself. But I think even that story, you know, with Leo Beinhaker being very unhappy about it and effectively saying, I'm really sorry for this, has sort of played into the German hands in a way, because it just focused their minds on the fact just how badly the Poles want to win this game.
Mm.
I think if there had been any danger, it would have been Germany underestimating the Poles. That won't happen now, of all these silly headlines.
Interesting. You mentioned you know, Germany, a lot of people's favourites, and they have won the European Championship a record 3 times. However, they're currently on a 6-game winless streak. In fact, they haven't won a game at the European Championships since the final of Euro 96 against the Czechs. You don't see that changing tomorrow,
yeah.
Clearly.
A golden goal it was then. Yeah, I think I think everybody knows this record. Certainly the German team is aware of it, and I think they're pretty convinced that between you know, one of the 3 games, that series will, that record will be broken.
Mm.
And I think there's a very good chance that the Poles will provide the first opportunity to rectify that situation.
They've got, how do I pronounce it, Ebi Smolarek, is it, who scored 9 goals, who's actually the top marksman from qualifying to actually take part in Euro 2008 with Healy and Eduardo out. Is he much of a threat?
Yeah, he's a fine attacking midfield right-sided player whose nickname is the Hash Monster.
And why is that?
Because of an unfortunate incident with an inadvertently consumed space cake.
Oh, right, okay.
While he was playing for Feyenoord, which was subsequently picked up in a drugs test.
Oh dear, okay, right. They're having a big match-fixing scandal in Poland, are they not? Didn't that was a huge boost, I remember, to the Italians. That they found that a great motivator, having a national disgrace back in their domestic football scene. I wonder if that might fire the Poles up similarly?
Yeah, you could. I'm sure you could make that argument. The thing is, I feel that in Poland, and also, you know, they've got the threat about the Euro 2012 perhaps not happening because of that hanging over them, as it were, is more of a downer than actually something that will rile them up. But I think, you know, they've got enough on their plate, as it were, because they're playing Germany, it's got all these historical connotations, they really want to beat them. And I think they're still a little bit upset watching that documentary from the World Cup where you see Klinsmann, who you don't really think is somebody who, you know, is somebody who's spouting jingoism and so on, saying, we're not going to give up what we've achieved so far, and certainly not to the Poles. Certainly not to the Poles.
Mm.
So I think Beinhaker might play that little clip a couple of times, and they're definitely going to go for it. Match fixing scandal. I don't think it's going to come into it that much.
Indeed not. Raphael, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the game tomorrow, and we look forward to catching up with you on your travels.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Raphael. Now, of course, meantime, we mentioned in our little video clip, the inaugural one, that we weren't too impressed with the atmosphere yet. And Barney, you were saying you've jetted in today. You didn't seem to be a tournament going on, you were saying.
Well, just getting off the plane and coming into town, it wasn't immediately obvious there was anything particularly going on. I think I saw one flag on a car.
Right.
And I went to the Ernst Happel Stadium today, and the atmosphere was distinctly lukewarm.
It was empty, surely.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if it was the day before England's first game at Wembley before a tournament, you can bet there'd be more than one drunk man wandering very slowly around the
well,
stadium.
It's true. We're not short on drunk men wandering around when England games are involved. But
that's for sure. But I think the Croatians seem to have taken our criticism to heart, and about half the population of Croatia appears to have converged on Vienna, and I believe some of them are passing the window as I speak.
As if on cue. Those are Croatian fans making the streets of central Vienna their own.
Yeah. Very colourful, very well behaved as well, should be noted.
Right.
So far, anyway. And there's thousands of them in town for the game. So.
Right, they like making a bit of noise, actually. Slaven Bilic, of course. Noted proponent of top Croatian rock. He's in, what, two bands, is it?
Apparently, yes.
Yeah. Do you know, Barney, you know their names, don't you? Come on.
I believe one of them's called Rawbow.
It is.
And the other one's called New Era. One word.
10 points. And, of course, Slaven Bilic is also the only national team coach who's actually written his team's anthem. Should we hear that? Let's hear Fiery Madness by Rawbow. Rolling back the years with the sweet sounds of Rawbow.
You're turning into Dave Pearce.
In what way? All right. Well, there you go. Those are the Croatians, and don't they sound great? And they've got a game against Austria tomorrow. This place is going to be... I used the word heaving yesterday, but I imagine there's going to be a terrific atmosphere here in Vienna. The fan parks will be absolutely... packed out, and so will the Ernst Happel Stadium. And of course, everyone says that Austria are the worst team to ever take part in this tournament. But of course, Croatia, without Eduardo,
we'll still beat them easily, I'd imagine. But you'd never know. I have a sneaking feeling that Austria will get a result again in at least one of their matches, even if it's only a draw. But I think the home support has to count for something, and the 12th man will, you know.
I think they'll do well to out-sing the Croatians tomorrow.
Yeah, it does sound like the Croatians might have a bit of noise behind them as well. Well, there you go. That's pretty much it. Just to remind you once again that it is not just audio work that we're doing here in Vienna. Along with the paper, we'll be shooting a few videos here and there. But Barry and I were out with Barney today at the Fan Zone. We're doing things like this.
Hello again, everybody. Barry and I are still here in Vienna, still waiting for the football to start. And in the meantime, we've discovered the excitement of the Fan Zone, which is a giant park here in Vienna. You can see the palatial rat house. It's a rat house, Barry, and we've been caught.
And there has been an infestation of football fans.
My mother has already been in touch with me to tell me I should smile more,
right,
and not drink pints of beer so fast.
Really? Yeah. My father-in-law rang from Brazil actually to say that you should smile more and not drink pints of beer so fast. But no, we'll hopefully be finding time to record a few of our experiences here, and do have a look at that at guardian.co.uk/football. In the meantime, then, that was day one of Euro 2008. Fantastic stuff. Barney, thank you very much for joining us.
Tschüss.
Barry and you too.
Juice.
Indeed so. And from me, Juice, as well, to you, Pete, the producer, and Matt, who's along for The Guardian, and all of you. If you do feel like stopping by, as I say, Gusser Beer Clinic, downtown Vienna. Everybody knows the place. Just follow the stream of empties. And and we'll hopefully speak to you tomorrow. Cheerio.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.